Hello, everybody. Good morning. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining us for the Texas Scorecard Friday Roundup. If you joined us for our broadcast at 11, glad to have you back. This one's going to be a little different. If you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry about it. No problem. But we're here now, actually joined with a very, very special guest, State Representative Kyle Biederman. Kyle Biederman has been probably the preeminent, most prominent legislator in Texas to be speaking out against the plans to move the Alamo Cenotaph as part of their Reimagine the Alamo plan. We've got him joined with us live here over the telephone. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, Brandon, thank you for having me on, and this information is very, very important, so I appreciate the opportunity.
So I think the easiest way to start this out for folks, and this is an issue that a lot of people have followed, but it's hard to believe now that we're looking, you know, look, we're in October of 2020. I mean, this is something that's been going on for years. So if you don't mind, could you give a little background on what this whole Reimagine the Alamo plan is and how exactly the Alamo Cenotaph fits into that?
Okay. So they being the General Land Office, which is headed by Commissioner George P. Bush, and the City of San Antonio, have been working on this Alamo plan for about 6 years, ever since Commissioner Bush basically kicked the Daughters of the Revolution out. Mm-hmm. So then he took over and started his own Alamo Trust group that was going to oversee the Alamo with a CEO in charge of the trust. And so this way there'd be multiple levels to, high transparency, things like that. So for 6 years, they've been working on this plan. 3 years ago, they invited legislators to come to the Alamo and tell them and show them what they've come up with a plan. And so I was one of the few legislators that actually went, saw the plan, and realized, yeah, there's some good things. Museum will be fine, a visitor center, fixing up the Alamo Church, of course, fixing up the long barracks. But the hope was to also have the battlefield look more like the battlefield, which right now is city streets and other things. But that's not what the plan was. But they tried to sell us with their dog and pony show and basically told us that the City of San Antonio was going to convey that land where the cenotaph stands in front of the Alamo Church, convey that to the state of Texas, and the state of Texas would basically take over. Mm-hmm. Well, that was 3 years ago. 2 years ago, that changed again and became a long-term lease with the City of San Antonio. So basically, we've got two groups. We've got two groups that are working on this project, and, you know, George P. Bush, the GLO, was supposed to be representing Texas, and the city of San Antonio is representing, you know, of course, San Antonio, and they don't agree, although George P. Bush is allowing everything to go through, including the cenotaph, not conveying land to Texas, but actually a long-term lease with San Antonio so that they will have control over what happens, especially with the messaging. So the messaging, which is actually called the vision and guiding principles, that is the real problem, because that's what you're going to see on the battlefield, and that's where the revisionist and the sanitizing of history is really taking place, in the vision and guiding principles. So all this has been going on for, you know, like I said, 3 years for me fighting this, but we got a huge victory 2 weeks ago when the Texas Historical Commission did not approve the final permit.
Yes, and I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, this happened a couple weeks back, the Texas Historical Commission voting 12-2 against moving the cenotaph. And I, as you pointed out, this was after a years-long fight with folks standing up to not only the city of San Antonio, but also the General Land Office. And when you actually got a vote, it was this overwhelming. And why do you think it is that, you know, it took this long and the vote was this overwhelming?
So we've known, and I've been having meetings. In fact, there were five representatives that met with George P. Bush almost 2 years ago and explained these exact concerns that they finally, these exact concerns that the Texas Historical Commission, that even Lieutenant Governor Patrick said at the meeting 2 weeks ago, we didn't know these things were going to happen. We didn't know. Basically, it was just that. Yet we were yelling about it 2 years ago, but no one was listening at the time, or no one really believed it was going to. It was that bad. So the lease was signed, which guaranteed the move of the cenotaph, which guaranteed the guiding principles, the change of the message, sanitizing of history, the revisionist stuff. All that was already signed, sealed, and delivered. The last thing was just a construction permit to dismantle the cenotaph.
Mm-hmm.
That was all we had left. And fortunately, the Texas Historical Commission finally actually reached out to Texans and said, let us know what you think about moving the cenotaph, yes or no. And there was a survey on their website, and it came back 1,600 people in favor of moving the cenotaph, 29,000 Texans against it.
Well, and not
so
only that,
it was huge.
Yeah, you had, if folks remember, in a Republican primary not long ago, you had a proposition there which was overwhelmingly, I can't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head, 97%. I knew you would know it. 97% of Republican primary voters saying no to this plan. During the Republican primary, of course, Texas is for the time being a Republican-controlled state, and so I think that that carried a lot of weight with it as well.
It did, but the problem was we've got a Republican state, and the Republican primary voters voted that way, and yet we've heard nothing from our Republican governor. Lieutenant Governor finally came out, and I want to thank him for that.
Yeah,
but he waited till that vote to finally say something about, hey, this has gone too far. The lease has already been signed. The cenotaph's already been signed off to move. The guiding principle has already signed off to be guaranteed to be part of the Alamo footprint. But it took that to finally get the lieutenant governor to come out, and I'm grateful he did.
How many times have you written to Governor Greg Abbott on this?
I've written to him a number of times. Never a response, ever. And here he is, the governor of the state of Texas, the most important event in the state of Texas, because there would be no state of Texas without the Alamo, and yet silence completely. Even when he's called out publicly, silence. So we know, we know what the problem is. The problem is they all want to be liked by each other. No one wants to actually stand up and say anything. They're just hoping it just goes through, and then they blame it on the city of San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the city of San Antonio is the one making most of the noise. The other one's doing most of the talking, but the GLO is signing off on every bit of it because it takes the GLO, George P. Bush, and the mayor of San Antonio to final say everything. And they have veto power. Those two have veto power. Obviously, George P. Bush never used veto power and approved everything. And then here it is, after this vote where the state of Texas called out the people and the Texas Historical Commission finally listened to the people, because GLO won't listen to people, and the city of San Antonio won't listen to people, just their own boards. When the vote came down, 12-2 against moving the cenotaph, the only voice we heard after that was the city of San Antonio complaining about how this could happen. They couldn't believe it could happen. But then we had silence from George P. Bush representing the state of Texas. And that's a shame. That is a real shame.
Absolutely. Real quick before you go, I want to ask you about next session. You've already pledged that you're going to file some legislation to take back control over the Alamo, specifically, from, as you mentioned, the city of San Antonio, and actually bring in some legislative oversight. You filed some legislation last cycle, obviously didn't receive a vote in the House. Explain real quickly both what you're planning on filing this next session and what citizens can be doing right now to help in that fight.
Well, we're so grateful, and we just want to praise God that we stopped the moving of the cenotaph. So where do we go from here? That's the question, and that's what you're asking. Where do we go from here? Well, I had the legislation last session to actually have eminent domain over that small piece of property in front of the Alamo where the cenotaph sits. Have a say to Texas, if the city of San Antonio won't give it to us like they promised and told us they would, then let's just eminent domain and take it from them, and then we'll take over the whole plan. And again, here's where Lieutenant Governor Patrick stepped in again, and he said that we need to be guiding this program. The legislature needs to, and it needs to be about the battle. So everything that he said at the Texas Historical Commission hearing was right on everything that needs to be done. So I just took that and I'm putting that into legislation, saying if they don't convey the land back to us, we need eminent domain. We need to revisit the guiding principles that they're going to use for the messaging for the Alamo footprint. Now, if they want to put some of this 10,000 years of history of slavery and racism and myths that they're calling that the Alamo was a myth, put it in the museum, but don't put it on the battlefield. And then the other thing, we got to get out of that lease. We just cannot be under the thumb of San Antonio. This is Texas's most sacred property. It happens to be in San Antonio, but there's that one piece of land. That's the only say-so San Antonio really has. We need to take that from them and have Texas take control of this. And so I'm just so grateful that we're in the position and that we continue to fight. We didn't give up just like our defenders didn't give up. And so we're hopefully going to be able to now have an amazing Alamo battlefield that will be representative and honoring to our defenders and to the state of Texas.
Absolutely. Well, Tanya Benson in the comments right now says, thanks, Representative Biederman, for standing for our Alamo. I agree as well, and so do many Texans. And thank you, Representative Biederman, for joining us this morning.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Brandon.
Thank you.
God bless you. God bless Texas.
Thank you. We're going to be following that story, that legislation at TexasScorecard.com as that progresses. Now I want to get to a few stories from the week before we go here. Maybe the fastest 4 or 5 minutes in news. I don't know if that's a copyright violation. I came up with it independently. But the first one is, this is a story that came out yesterday that I wanted to talk about really, really briefly. Our own Aaron Anderson reported on this. You've got a North Texas mayoral candidate arrested for dozens of mail-in ballot voter fraud felonies. This is a guy up in Carrollton, a suburb up in the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex, running for mayor. And literally charged with, you know, I thought, okay, there's a number. Wow, he's charged with a number of these felonies. Literally 109 felonies related to fraudulently obtaining mail-in ballots of alleged nursing home residents. Here's how it works. This is a scam that we've heard of before. Essentially, what it looks like he's charged with here is registering people in nursing homes without their knowledge, creating a P.O. box, and having all those applications sent to the P.O. box. Now, luckily, it seems like he was so careless when he was doing this that he really caught the attention of the Denton County Sheriff's Office, the Texas Attorney General's Office, Texas Department of Public Safety, and police department up there who came in there and were able to stop it. But I mean, you have to note. I mean, how many times has the left in particular said that this sort of voter fraud doesn't happen? And yet, if they do tell you that, you can say, well, you've literally got a mayoral candidate being charged with over 100 felonies related to exactly this just this week. And so really, really interesting story, very informative as we go into early voting here this week. Next story real quick. Happened in Tyler, actually, earlier this week. We had talked a few weeks on this program about the movie Cuties. This is the Netflix film that a lot of people are comparing to child pornography. Well, just earlier this week on Tuesday, grand jury in Tyler County in Texas, charged Netflix for distributing this film for, quote, I'm quoting here, promoting visual material which depicts lewd exhibition of pubic area of a clothed or partially clothed child who is younger than 18 years of age, which appeals to the prurient interest in sex. So sort of gritty stuff. I'm not going to get into the details of this film, but I will say you had a number of people speaking out against this, people in government. You had Senator Ted Cruz, some lawmakers as well, State Representative Matt Schaefer gaining a lot of attention a few weeks ago for suggesting that this sort of action needed to happen. And, you know, you see this, it would have been unthinkable, I think, just a few years ago to see this sort of outward exhibition from a major company of putting out something like this, something that, you know, I don't know how this trial is going to go, but they're at least being charged, being indicted for promoting child pornography. Have you canceled your Netflix account? I know many have. And so this is a story we're going to watch, and interesting to see the Texas tie there. Now, earlier this week, Governor Greg Abbott teased in a Twitter post that he was going to have a big reopening announcement soon. And if you saw it, he had a little picture of some beer glasses clinking, leading a lot of people to think, okay, we're going to be reopening bars. This is bars have been closed pretty much since the end of June with 0% capacity. Even as restaurants, basically, if you're able to serve chips and salsa with your beer, you can open up to 75% capacity. A lot of business owners, small business owners who own these restaurants, a lot of employees who work there, who work at these bars, have been hurting for months now. He teases this in a Twitter post. Well, he comes out with his announcement a couple days later, and it's actually not a reopening at all. Instead, what he says is that county judges can decide whether or not they will allow bars to reopen in their counties, and even then, they can open up at 50% capacity. And of course, all the mask wearing, all the mandates along with that. And, you know, you think about it and you think, where do the majority of Texans, the most populous counties, right? Harris County, Dallas County, Travis County. These are counties that are run by Democrats and specifically have Democrat county judges, a number of whom in Harris County and in Dallas County specifically have already said that they're not going to go along with this. So you actually had the president of the Texas Bar and Nightclub Association come in and blast Abbott for this announcement, saying when other governors around the country like Ron DeSantis in Florida continue to lead and set a course for economic and social recovery for their states, today our governor punted. He's officially passed the buck, he goes on to say. And, you know, you've really seen this frustration growing. We've talked about it a lot over the last several months. But you're seeing it boil up here. You've actually got a protest at the governor's mansion tomorrow, Saturday, October 10th at 11 a.m. You've got a number of folks who are fed up. They're protesting at the governor's mansion saying they want to reopen Texas now. A number of the speakers slated to speak there, by the way, a number of attendees, Texas Republican Party, Republican Party of Texas Chairman Alan West, Agricultural Commissioner Sid Miller, State Senator Bob Hall, Don Huffines, Connie Burton, a lot of grassroots folks slated to be there. And so that's promising to be a pretty big event. Last story before we go today. We've got campaign finance reports out this week and pretty interesting development, I would say, with Governor Greg Abbott. Abbott, of course, is not on the ballot this time. He was just reelected 2 years ago in 2018. But he, despite not being on the ballot, has a pretty large campaign war chest. It's about $38 million as of the last report. So how much has he used to help Republicans down ballot? We've heard that there's a blue wave. You can see with this kind of mail-in voter fraud stuff that potentially a Democrat wave coming, or at the very least, something that Republicans need to probably take seriously. And yet you look at the reports, and as of September 24th, that's the latest date that this data is available, Abbott's campaign had only donated $57,000 to Republicans that are on the ballot, which is 0.2%, 0.2%. of his campaign funds. Now, look, he can spend his campaign funds obviously however he wants, but you'll notice that he's, of course, got to be governor when you've got the legislature coming back in session in 2021. And you don't know if there's going to be a Republican majority, if there's going to be a Democrat majority. And when folks like State Representative Tony Tinderholt and Jeff Kasin and some other state representative candidates that are trying to hold on to Republican seats that I look at the numbers, I think they'll hold on to them, but they're certainly having to actually go out there and campaign in the general election. When you've got these fights going around, this could have been, I think, a real, really big opportunity for Governor Greg Abbott to lead. And so far, we haven't seen that. Of course, there's going to be more time. We've got a little bit of time until the next reports come out. So we'll see what he decides to do. But the election, folks, the election is upon us. Election early voting actually starts on October 13th. That's next Tuesday. And, of course, has been extended. So we've got a few weeks of early voting, and then we've got the general election. And so we're going to be following all of that at TexasScorecard.com. If you have any questions about anything we spoke about today, please feel free to leave them in the comments if you're watching on Facebook. If not, thank you so much for joining us this Friday. Thank you for sticking with us. Have a great weekend.